Chapter 18. Ardium. A distinct change to the engine's pitch occurred as they passed into enemy-held territory and the smooth flight turned choppy. The Overlord's airframe rattled, its engines yowled, struggling to process air whose consistency was unnaturally inconsistent. A sense of wrongness upset all minds aboard the transport, thickening with every kilometre they flew closer.
"We approach the heart of darkness," said Donas Maxim.
Crystal tracks in his psychic hood glowed as they encountered the increased warp activity. Blue luminescence mingled with the transport bay's dark red combat lights, painting his helm with neon highlights. He was as uncanny as the beasts he was trained to destroy.
"I think we can all sense it," said Captain Felix, looking around at his warriors.
They had begun to fidget in the way peculiar to space marines, looking to their brothers and checking their equipment over and over again.
"Not so strongly as I," said the
Codicia. His words were hard, a shell against the pain.
"The warp taint is far more powerful than we predicted. We must be careful."
Maxim was the sole early pattern space marine inside the Overlord's twinned hulls. Every other was of the Primaris generation. Maxim's hood and the badges on his ornate blue armour made him bulkier than his own brothers, but every one of the Primaris space marines was taller than him and more powerfully built.
Accompanying Maxim was a single other psychic space marine, Gerundium, a Primaris Lexicanium.
The pair of them gave off a calming power, a sense of purpose and confidence that infused the already unshakable Felix with a resolve as solid as a neutron star, despite the warp taint emanating so powerfully from their target. In contrast, the malevolence around them seemed stronger. Owing to the position of his restraint cage, Felix was athwart the border where the malign and the benign actions of the warp mingled, discomforting his mind. On the enemy's side was a dark potency. Upon his skin beneath his armour, it felt like painful static electricity, a crawling of the flesh. It was a call, an urging to action he would rather not take, the kind that afflicts the insane deep into the night and demands something of violence to be done, a dark vitality, a turning in of agency, so that it became impotent self-destruction.
"I can feel it well enough. It pains me," said Felix.
He wondered at the sensation, logging it for later consideration. He had not felt anything like it before.
"This is the power that calls the dead from life."
Gerundium nodded.
"Disease alone cannot bring back the fallen, nor turn those who live into walking corpses."
He sounded flat and passionless, his own coping mechanism against the corruption they neared.
"That is a physical impossibility, as our apothecaries and the Primarch's Magi attest. Sorcery is the root of the disease. Without the warp, there would be no consequence to infection."
"The Plague Lord delights in the affectation of disease where disease alone is insufficient for his goals," said Maxim. "Lies are as great a part of their armoury as contradiction. They are the basis of the actions of the enemy. Nurgle represents the duality of life in death, and death in life. As with all things of the warp, it is unclean and a trap for the unwary."
"You include your own abilities,"
the Codicia grunted. His helmet turned within his protective Aegis helm.
"Our gifts bring great power, but they spring from the same poisoned well as diseases that rot the soul. To drink from it and remain pure is the greatest challenge we face."
"We feel this strongly because there is a wicked power at work. It is from the palace spire that the corruption emanates," added Gerundium. "But we will not know its true nature for certain until we witness it ourselves."
The Overlord shook. Its armour was massively thick and its engines prodigiously powerful. The new craft made Thunderhawks look like toys. As with so much the Primarch had commissioned, the Overlord harkened back to older designs of insertion craft, improved by the boundless creativity of Belisarius Call. But its technological power could not shelter its occupants completely from threats either mundane or arcane. The movement of the craft changed. No longer was it affected solely by atmospheric anomalies. An explosion sounded close by, its violence muffled by the Overlord's thick hull. The craft slid sideways before leveling out. Smaller vibrations, rapidly pulsed, chased it upwards.
Captain, there is unexpectedly heavy fire coming from the palace spire's mid-ranges, voxed the pilot. We cannot land at the target point.
Get us as close as you can, responded Felix.
There is a skypark cluster 400 meters horizontal, two levels down from the target point and in the next spire.
The pilot went silent a moment as he consulted a cartograph.
The Sighing Spire.
The pilot exloaded the position. Felix's cartograph automatically engaged. They headed for a cluster of spire palaces at the very pinnacle of one of Ardium's great hive cities, their needle points pricking at the belly of the void. Felix saw them as wireframe representations. Ugly, semi-organic growths moved sluggishly over the top, a psychic overlay provided by the Primarch's Concilia Psychana. The shifting web gathered most densely on a cankerous mass in the upper reaches of the tallest tower, once the home of the Hive Lord. The target point was close by the needle's dark heart. Gun batteries blinked red around the site. The pilot's alternative flashed up, a domed garden extending on an elegant lever from the adjacent spire's side. Further than Felix would have liked from the target point, but the only practical option in the circumstances.
Take us in, said Felix.
The craft responded immediately, banking sideways and down. The thunder of anti-aircraft fire intensified, becoming a constant rumble. Felix looked over his warriors again. There were 40 of them in the craft, and a further 80 in the two accompanying overlords. The ships were similar to the Corvus Black Stars used by the Inquisition and the Death Watch. Like the Black Stars, the overlords possessed twin transport bays with their own assault doors, but they were bigger and even more blessed with advanced technologies. Anti-munitions cannons added a rolling burr to the noise from outside, slinging hypervelocity steel balls at incoming shells and missiles. Those enemy rounds that got through exploded on shimmering energy shields, whose hiccuping buzz as they recharged joined a furious chorus of the embattled ship's systems. The Primaris Space Marines aboard the ships were all Ultramarines. At least, they were now. 6 weeks ago, they had been the unnumbered sons of Gilliman. They were destined to reinforce the founding chapter, and the pale grey chevrons partially obscuring their ultimas had been reverently removed. They had temporary squad markings and had adopted a light blue for their company colour. This would be their first battle as Ultramarines, led by Felix, an 11th captain where there should only be 10. They had not even met the chapter master. Indeed, Marnius Kalgar was ignorant of their assignment to his chapter and of their current mission. Felix pondered how Kalgar might feel about the Primarch's unilateral altering of the Codex Astartes. The captain could not help but feel that, in his drive for victory and efficiency, Gilliman had been careless with the feelings of his existing sons. Increasingly, Gilliman looked to the Primaris Space Marines as his first solution. He made no attempt to hide the fact that the days of the older Space Marines were numbered. Felix's theorizing took his mind away from the coming fight. He refocused his attention on the battle. A clock raced towards zero upon his helm display.
"Stand by for attack," he ordered.
"Brace for impact," said the pilot,
his voice voxed into every helmet on board. The ship jinked violently from side to side, accelerating as it did so. Every one of its little voices rose in protest, blending into a raucous machine howl. Explosions boomed from all quarters. Felix brought up an external vid feed. A grainy image of an armored glass dome, full of dark shapes, grew rapidly in front of his eyes. The ship opened fire with its wing-mounted desolator las cannons. The three-barreled weapons rotated at blurring speed as they fired, their rapid torque helping offset atmospheric lensing, not that beam dispersion was much of a problem at this range. Banks of melter cannons mounted in the Overlord's nose opened fire a few seconds later. Molten holes appeared in the armor glass, and the Overlord burst through the weakened dome, sending molten minerals and shards of metal scattering inward into the gardens.
"Ready? Now!" yelled Felix. "We march for Macragge!" roared the Primaris Space Marines.
The gunship thumped down hard, throwing Felix forward in his restraints. The ship rocked back on its landing hydraulics. As it recoiled from the impact, Felix's harness disengaged and shot back into its housing in the ceiling. Simultaneously, the assault doors blew down with crushing force, flattening whatever was on the other side and admitting a sickly yellow light into the transport bay.
First out were the Primaris aggressors. They wore battle plate of a similar type to Felix's, but more massively armored, the Gravis class.
Before they had exited the troop bay, missiles shot from their shoulder-mounted racks, their exhaust filling the craft's troop compartments. There were two squads of aggressors, one for each door. Two squads of Hellblasters followed, the containment chambers on their plasma incinerators glowing bright as they cycled up to fire. Felix and the two librarians emerged next, along with the temporary company's apothecary. After them came four squads of intercessors who fanned out, bolt rifles up. Ardium was a hive world, a designation synonymous with overcrowding and human misery. But this was Ultramar, and the hive worlds in the star realm of the Ultramarines were kinder than most. Though life was hard and short there, some provision was made for the well-being of their citizens. Ardium had a plethora of domes projecting from its hives, especially on the upper levels, where large-scale biohabitats recreated those lost from most of the surface. The planet was famed for them, giving the hives there the appearance of gargantuan trees. A forest surrounded Felix's ship, but it was not the healthy place it was supposed to be. Yellow fog raced out through the hole in the dome, sucked away by the differential in air density. Flags of it streamed from between blackened branches festooned with slime. At such rare heights, Macragge's sun shone without the impediment of clouds. But though Nurgle's work had not yet poisoned the sky, the strength of the sunlight was stymied soon after entering the hole made by the Overlord, its beams becoming split and divided, lost amid the vapours poisoning the hive's inner atmosphere. Winds blew briskly towards the breach, the fog's twists forming screaming faces as it was sucked out into Ardium's upper troposphere. The park's paths were overrun with rotting profusions of sickly vegetation. Trees had swollen into twisted giants, their shapes corrupted into menacing silhouettes in the murk. People had been overcome by the swift growth and incorporated into their seeping trunks, the change happening so swiftly that it appeared they had no time to flee. Their limbs were trapped in wooden prisons, and their bodies hardened by lignaceous intrusion. Only their eyes, moist and wide in skin like bark, had movement, and they were wild and full of madness. From behind these rotting bowers, the enemy, bloated heretic Astartes in filth brown armor, their plate cracked and dribbling polluted fluids, fired at the emerging Primaris Space Marines. Felix took up station behind a broken statue of an ancient Ultramarine hero in the dome's center. Bolt fire cracked off its chipped body. A mat of slippery vines carpeted the paving and seats around, blending what had been an open circular area into the diseased jungle of the park.
"All squads, advance! Secure the landing zone!" he ordered.
The Overlord opened fire with the heavy bolter turrets fixed on its lower wing surfaces. They thundered out fire, the passage of the bolts themselves enough to saw down swathes of diseased plant life. They exploded within wood made soft by overgrowth and rot, spraying sodden pulp everywhere. The dome juddered with the explosions, and Felix looked dubiously at the ground, half expecting it to shear and fail. Outside the algae-speckled armored last dome, another Overlord roared past, the backwash of its quintuple engines shaking the entire park. The fabric of the dome was as corrupted as the plants within it. Its metals were rusted and the armor glass, a substance that could persist for millennia in the most hostile environments, was pitted with incipient corrosion.
"We are going to have to get out of this death trap immediately," Felix voxed to his sergeants and officers. "The park is close to collapse."
His warriors voxed back their understanding.
Overlords Adriaticus and Scion of Ultramar, find somewhere else to land. This structure is unsound. Overlord Jove, take off. We cannot risk losing you. Stand by to extract upon my order.
Affirmative,
replied the Overlord pilot. Las cannons spitting fire still, the ship's wingtip engines screeched, pivoted downwards, and forced it up and back through the hole it had created in the dome. The park shook, showering the strike team with flakes of rust and stringy black leaves. Felix did a rapid scan of the dome. There were 20 or so Death Guard in the park. Bolt rounds were being traded back and forth between them and the Primaris intercessors, while roaring plasma streams burst from the Hellblaster's guns, to be answered in kind by the Death Guard's own special weapons troopers. The aggressors stomped forwards, their Gravis pattern armor protecting them in the teeth of the Death Guard's fire. They returned fire as they advanced, rockets shrieking from their backs on needles of white heat. The loading mechanisms in the weapons clunked repetitively as they replenished their racks from the aggressors' internal ammo stores. Plumes of fire billowed from their flame gauntlets, drenching everything with burning promethium. The diffuse air's oxygen content was low, and the wood was wet, but the tenacity of the promethium fire was such that soon tranches of the corrupted woodland were smouldering, helped by the blast furnace roar of escaping atmosphere, and greasy smoke joined the yellow fog in its hurried exit through the dome breach. There was a squad of 7 plague marines holding the exit to the park. They sheltered behind a black tree that had fallen over the path. More plants, slippery with decay, coated the block paving. Movement in the woods either side of the main path had Felix bring up his visual filters, his false color heat sense revealing more of the enemy attempting to encircle them. One of the plague marines was blasted backwards by the combined fire of an entire intercessor squad. He remained upright as he was pommeled, his guts hanging in dripping loops from a new rent in his rotten plate. A hellblaster spotted the traitor's survival, and with a quickly aimed stream of plasma, put him down for good.
Hellblaster squads, Alpha and Beta, take out designator enemy squads on the flanks, said Felix, exloading the targeting data to his warriors. Intercessor squads, prepare to charge. Aggressor squads, burn out the enemy blocking our egress.
Away to the right, a ball of brilliant blue lightning burst amid the trees, shaking the failing dome with psychic thunder. Codicia Maxim held up his hand, rotating his fingers, and the thunderball turned with them. As he clenched his fist, the ball lightning collapsed with a second peal of thunder, taking with it all matter that had occupied the space, leaving a perfectly spherical hole in the diseased forest.
They are falling back,
voxed Helicus, one of his intercessor sergeants. Unbidden, Felix's cogitator projected the warrior's name and vital signs across his helm display, highlighting his location on the cartograph projected into his eyes, along with status updates on his armor integrity and ammunition count. A combat effectiveness estimate blinked a steady green at 100% capability.
We follow, said Felix. Now!
He ran out from around the statue and drew his power sword. The plague marines fired as they fell back, squad by squad. Their lumbering movements acquired a certain crispness as they withdrew, an echo of martial training similar to his own, and Felix had a glimpse of the warriors they had once been, not so very different to himself. He blinked, and the semblance was gone. The Death Guard were twisted, diseased, far beyond human, deserving only of death. His power sword crackled, echoing his own hunger to strike them down. Through rotten stands of dying trees, the battle raged, the Ultramarines fighting into the teeth of the Death Guard's withdrawal, the wood disintegrating into a vile slop when hit. The Primaris Space Marines were slowed by the terrain, while the Plague Marines did not seem to be, melting back into the mist which flowed like an endless river from deeper within the spire. The entrance to the Sky Park was ahead, its ornamental brickwork choked with evil-looking creepers and streaked with green tracks of moisture. Beneath the arch, dense mats of pulsating mushrooms grew, their stalks so woody that they jammed the park's blast doors open, preventing them from closing. The last enemy squad was departing the dome, chased out by burning lines of plasma and swift bolts. They paused a moment, taking shelter behind the columns supporting the archway, in order to give out one last volley while their fellows vanished into the murk of the sighing spire. Felix saw his chance.
"Charge!"
he roared, and leapt through the mulchy growths of the park, running at full tilt towards the foe. Bolts burst against his energy field and whined from his pauldrons. The bolt's mass detectors, damaged by the contact, set off in mid-air, so that he ran through a maelstrom of fire and shrapnel. So many explosions so close to his head caused his displays to jump and his auditory suppressors to burr angrily. The Plague Marines were unbelievably resilient. One was a burning torch, his body fat liquefying in the fire and fueling the fire, but he stood firm, blazing away with his gun. Not one of them had weathered this fight unscathed, but still they fought on with cratered flesh and sundered armour. The plasma streams of the Hellblaster squad's incinerators were the only sure way to slay these twisted space marines. The power of a sun vented as a glaring pike of superheated gas, the plasma shots melted through ancient ceramite and burned the plague marines from inside out. A couple of the last Death Guard fell back, and they were subject to the concentrated firepower of Felix's half-company as they turned to leave. Though the enemy were quicker than they looked, they were not quick enough. Felix charged with no thought for support. Tactical consideration was lost beneath a wave of hatred for these beings, who had damned their own species in exchange for false immortality and crumbs of power. He connected with the trailing member of the squad as they were pulling back. A few more bolts came his way, and then the Plague Marines surged in to engage him hand to hand as he caught their stragglers. Suddenly, he was surrounded by things worthy of nightmares. A warrior with the face of a toad, and another with his jaw missing and a long scabrous tongue whipping back and forth from the hole. Their flesh was riddled with maggot burrows, and their armour corroded through to show leprous skin and open sores. The Death Guard should not have been capable of life, but they fought well, their bodies supported by the power of chaos, their skills honed by 10 millennia of war. A hatred to mirror Felix's own flickered in the yellowed eyes peering at him through cracked eyelenses. Rusted knives jabbed at Felix, their dull edges blistering the paint of his armour where they scratched. Alarms howled at the pain inflicted upon the machine's spirit. Bolters were thrown down and bolt pistols drawn. Felix was not destined to die there. He was a Primaris Space Marine. He was a captain. He was armed and armoured with the finest war gear in the Imperium. A potent mix of loyalty and fury suffused him, as efficacious as the adrenal elixirs pumped into his body by his implants and his battle plate. Twin hearts hammering, Felix meted out death to the deathless. His power sword spat with droplets of cooking blood as he cleaved away limbs from flabby bodies, and he riddled with bolts torsos that decayed with the vigour of the grave while still alive.
"For Ultramar! For the Primarch! For the Emperor!"
he roared as he slew, his voice blasted at full volume from his voxmeter. He became one with the moment, every piece of his enhanced mind, body and war gear working perfectly together to turn him into a killing machine. He cut and parried with marvellous efficiency, so skillfully that even the prowess of these deadly veterans was no safeguard against his fury. Rabute Gilliman might talk of the Adeptus Astartes as potential for peacetime activity, but war was what they were made for, weapons were what they were. The Emperor's intention for Felix was clearer to him than ever before, and he did not care. If it were his destiny to be a weapon, so be it. He would spill blood until he could fight no more. A dim awareness of others fighting by his side impinged upon his battle lust. A staff topped with a horned skull smote the last of the Death Guard, and then there were no more foes.
"Do you feel it?" asked Codicia Maxim. "Do you feel the power in this place?"
Felix panted hard, staring at Maxim with blank eyes. A tumble of meaningless data rolled down his retinal displays. The Aurora chapter psyker placed the head of his staff against the centre of Felix's chest. Along its length, the crystalline matrix glowed. Felix's mind cleared.
"Do not fall prey to the power of the warp," said Maxim.
The warp is at work here, so thin the barrier between this place and the Empyrean has become.
I have nothing but hatred for these things, said Felix,
gesturing with his power gauntlet at the fallen plague marines.
I have fought against chaos many times.
Even as he said the words, he questioned his aggressive tone.
Then you are very much in danger. Its effects can be unpredictable. Do not expect your seducer to wear the same form as your enemy. It will use your mind against you in any way it can, and only when it has you snared will the power that wishes to rule this place make its play to tempt you into its own perverse twisting of reality. More life to kill your enemies, more flesh to withstand pain, so you might kill again and again, forever. You are a warrior, so the dark gods will use your belligerence, your loyalty, and your honor against you, no matter which of them you are unfortunate enough to cross.
Maxim raised his staff and let its base thump into the mess of mutant plants at his feet. At his touch, they shriveled back, revealing the filthy paving underneath.
You of the Ultima Founding are mighty warriors, but you still have much to learn. A century of war is poor preparation for the foes we must face.
Standing tall again, Felix swallowed. With a trembling thumb, he upped the output of his sword's disruptor field to burn off the last of the traitor's baked-on gore.
Then our intelligence is correct, he said. This is the right place.
Maxim nodded curtly.
The strength of the device is astounding. We must destroy it now.
Felix shook off his battle fugue. He had never slipped so far from himself. He was on the verge of apology, but Maxim spoke first.
Be careful, he said,
and strode on. Where the Codicia walked, the stinking mist shrank back. Felix looked down the hallway linking the sky park to the main body of the spire. It, too, had a transparent roof, but it was so fouled with slime he might as well have been looking down a tunnel. His war gear's inbuilt short-range Auspex probed ahead, seeking foes in the gloom, but found none. He voxed Apothecary Undyne.
How many casualties?
12 injured, 3 seriously. The others can fight on.
No dead, came the efficient response. Felix switched to company-wide voxcast.
Form up, he ordered his strike force. We proceed to Mission Site Alpha.
They advanced at pace into the sighing spire, eager to leave behind the creaking skypark and enter the palace. Similar dereliction awaited them inside. The wind continued to howl upwards, the spire acting like a giant chimney, and the fog thinned away. The sighing spire had been a masterful display of architectural grandeur, some might say arrogance. The spire imprisoned over 300 metres of sky. The walls were an extravagance of arches, all piled one atop the other, their openings glazed with armourglass. Armourglass and other, more exotic, translucent substances. Within the panes were artful light sculptures, windows that, when struck at a particular angle on a particular day, would project an image with the phantom veracity of a hololith. None would ever work again. Most were broken or buckled, casting fragments of their embedded imagery in ghastly fashion. Fragments of faces emerged without warning from the dark, and the Primaris Space Marines, battle-hardened and heroic though they were, fired more than a few shots at these unexpected phantasms.
Spread out, said Felix. This level, level above, level below.
Every command he gave was short and to the point. Verbal communication was inefficient. If his orders were sufficiently complex, he supplemented his voice with swift pulse data exloads. The company neosphere was alive with back-and-forth data canting, giving Felix a tactical overview superior to those available to space marines not of the Ultima Founding. Walkways bounded the drop every 30 metres, 4 die-straight bridges, heavy with the thick Gothic decoration common to the 41st millennium, crossed over the void at the 1st, 4th, 7th, and uppermost level. Above the highest bridge was a hollow needle, six-sided, its walls pierced by shaped louvers which, in cleaner times, made the high air currents of Ardium into heavenly musics. They had been joined by ragged holes rotted right through the fabric of the hive, and the songs they now lowed were as piteous as the calls of diseased animals. The cybernetic constructs that tended them hung dead and tattered from wings nailed to the walls. The whole hive top oscillated in the screaming winds of the upper troposphere. Such places were designed to sway with the currents of air at that altitude, and with any tectonic upheaval at the hive root far, far below. But there was a pained lurching to the spire's movement, and stronger gusts were accompanied by the screams of dying machines and the grinding of tortured metal. The floors were out of true, sloping further with each powerful wind-borne judder. Felix watched carefully through the borrowed picked feeds of helm lenses as his men ran to cover doors to the turrets on the outside of the spire. They deployed expertly at the top and base of the access ramps that wound up between the spread floors, every angle of fire covered with plasma incinerator and bolt rifles. Felix sometimes wished for the tactical flexibility offered by older-style Space Marine squads, desirous of the heavy weapons capability they offered. But single-armament squads streamlined tactical choice and increased battle responsiveness, and the plasma incinerators of the Hellblasters were a good medium-weight compromise.
"No sign of the enemy, my captain,"
voxed Sergeant Tevian of the 3rd Intercessor Squad. The middle bridge was their way into the palace spire, where their intelligence placed the device of the enemy. An arch greater than all the others spread over the bridge end, forming one end of a tunnel leading out of the sighing spire. A statement of power, its grandiosity had become deeply ironic. Its span hung with the shreds of failing phantom artworks, and it beckoned as coldly as a reptilian maw. Felix glanced at the Codicia and the taller Lexicanium. Reading his actions accurately, Gerundium spoke.
"It is that way, Captain, close by the feasting hall of the Hive Governor. If we are to prevail, we must go through."
Felix attempted contact with the other two subgroups of his strike company and was rewarded with an earful of sawing static like the buzzing of swarms of flies. He cut out his strategic vox, tasking his battle plate's cogitator to reactivate it the minute the lieutenants leading the others made contact.
"Over the bridge," he ordered. "Squads Tevian and Helicus cover. Hellblaster squad Flavian behind aggressors. Move out."
Felix went close to the front. He would gladly fight at the head of his army, but Codex doctrine ruled placing one's officers at the very forefront of an advance as suboptimal, likely to lead to the rapid elimination of the command cadre. He joined Flavian. The aggressor squad made an unbreachable shield in front of them. Empty space yawned on the other side of the bridge's low parapets. Sunlight filtered through corrosion and the broken light sculptures, revealing the extent of the spire's accelerated decay. The variety of chaos was manifold. Even within the limited purview of each of the fell entities that called themselves gods, there was staggering variety. Where the Sky Park had been a riot of life decaying in the aftermath of abundant growth, the spire interior was bare of any living thing. Instead, its corruption was evidenced in patterns of oxidization spreading over the walls. Violent oranges, deep greens, and vibrant marine turquoises. Metal, it seemed, could die as colourfully as flesh.
"Brother Captain, we have contacts moving on our position."
At the moment Helicus voxed Felix, he saw the signifiers himself.
"Light aircraft, coming up from below. Forward party, increase speed. The rest of you, cover our advance," ordered Felix.
The aggressors broke into a jog that shook the bridge. The intercessor squads lowered their bolt rifles from fully aimed positions and cradled them at their hips, switching from single shot to short burst mode. The greater ammunition expenditure was worthwhile, for it maintained fire efficiency when moving at speed when shots could not be perfectly aimed. As precise as any Mechanicus machine, the forward party made the other side, turned and took up position around the guard walls of the spire ramps. Engines screeched in the spire shaft, jarring with the hideous wind music, jet turbines grinding hard for want of lubricant. Felix risked a look below. Seven heavy three-engine drones were rising rapidly up the shaft.
"Where?"
called out Codicia Maxim.
"These are demon engines. I can taste their souls."
"Destroy them," said Felix.
Bolts and plasma crossed the shaft, skewering the lead drone from multiple directions. Its armor cracked moistly, like chitin rather than plasteel. An engine blew out, and it whirled down to destruction.
"More coming in from above,"
vox Sergeant Brutian of the 2nd Hellblaster Squad. The dead spire's acoustic design made it a sounding chamber where every noise was amplified massively. Bolts exploded like heavy mortar rounds. Air, superheated by plasma streams, exploded with the force of tropical storms. The lower drones were in a poor firing position. At their angle of attack, the Primaris Space Marines were well sheltered by the ramp and walkway walls. Gouts of sticky yellow plague liquids splashed against the building's fabric, eating into the metal and causing fleshy boils to sprout and blood to flow around the impact sites in violation of all natural law. For the descending demon engines, however, the converse was true. The sprays of infected matter they pumped from their cannons came over the top of the walls, washing over the Space Marines. The paint bubbled on their armor, and warriors fell with pained cries as the vile material ate through their soft seals and into the flesh beneath. The two librarians worked together, nullifying hexes and banishing the trapped demons back into the warp. Three of the drones fell this way, and another two to the concentrated fire of the Primaris Space Marines, before the Strike Force's attention was diverted elsewhere.
"Captain, I have multiple contacts coming from below on the ramps," shouted Helicus against the crack and boom of battle. "Some kind of infantry. There are thousands of them."
Felix retasked his suit's autosensors to take a sounding even as he fired his gauntlet bolter, riddling a bloat drone hovering up before him with explosive rounds. His attack knocked it back through the air. Cratered metal flesh weeping thin liquids, it dropped out of sight. Felix's autosensors indicated his scan was done. He rotated his cartograph. The walkways were so crowded with enemy contacts that they were a solid red.
"More coming from behind,"
voxed Flavian. Felix looked through the arch leading into the next spire. Movement registered first upon his autosensors, then upon his vision. The noble dead of Ardium were marching to war. They shambled forwards, clad in ruined finery. They were propelled by limbs that should not, could not, possibly work. Their faces were twisted into rictus grins, but in their eyes was hopeless despair.
"Plague walkers," he spat.
"Worse," said Maxim. "By the Emperor's light, their souls are trapped within their carcasses. The pain!
We shall put them out of their misery."
Felix had to shout to make himself heard.
"Aggressors, turn about! Immolation protocols! Burn them back! All squads, consolidate on our position! We shall fight our way through!"
A drone exploded with a boom behind him, showering metal gummed with sticky meat across the walkways. Something inside gave out an inhuman scream as it died, half of pain, half of release. The aggressors waded into the dead. The plague zombies' feeble hands and makeshift weapons were no use against the inviolable gravis plate. They bit at the Space Marines' limbs, shattering their rotten teeth on ceramite. The aggressors responded with a boiling wash of chemical fire. The dead still fought as they burned. Four drones remained. Gerundium speared one with crackling lightning, searing the demon from its shell. Another took hits from both Hellblaster squads and was consumed in an actinic ball of energy. Intercessors gained the bridge. The dead coming from below were slow, but there were so many that Felix's small group could not prevail against them.
"Firing lines! Triple rows!" he said. "We must clear a way through to the palace spire!"
Three squads, all missing a member or two now, lined up. The first threw themselves prone, the second knelt behind them, the third stood.
"Aggressors, back!"
Felix ordered.
"Intercessors, prepare to fire!"
Set weapons to full automatic fire. Release these wretches from their torment and carve our way out of here.
The aggressors stepped aside with ponderous elegance. The barrier removed, the burning dead surged forwards, white teeth shining in blackening flesh.
Fire!
Bellowed Felix. 12 bolt rifles opened up, sending out a wall of mass-reactive shells that gouged a deep and immediate passage into the crowd. Felix joined his men and fired with them. The dead fell into a thick carpet of twitching limbs, many still on fire.
Hellblasters! Fire!
Felix ordered. Aside from the squad forming the rearguard, all of the Space Marines were on the same level now, firing into the crowd of dead. Walking corpses exploded or flash burst into steam when hit by plasma.
Advance!
Bellowed Felix. His boltstorm gauntlet roaring, he led his men against the damned. His boots crushed corpses flat, threatening to mire him in traps of broken ribs. He brought his power sword into play, using it like a machete to hack down the foe. He needed none of his considerable skill to kill them. Hundreds fell to Felix and his men. No matter how many they slew, the dead came on in seemingly endless tide. Meter by meter, they forced a way through. Felix raised his sword to strike at a skull-faced warrior and halted his blow just in time. The skull was the helm of a Primaris Reaver.
Cease fire! He commanded.
The last line of the dead fell down, their souls released. Sparking power blades were yanked back out of chests.
Sergeant Lycaeus, well met, said Felix. Do you have Vox? Ours is not functioning beyond our immediate proximity.
The Reaver's leader reloaded his bolt pistol.
The enemy are jamming our communications across the battle zone. Lieutenant Astium ordered us to seek you out. We heard your gunfire. We fought our way from the palace spire.
The Reaver squad was armed with oversized combat knives, glimmering with disruption fields, and heavy bolt pistols. Their helms were death's heads, and their left pauldrons enlarged to provide better protection in melee. Their armor was eerily silent, adapted for stealth work. Reavers were an infiltration and close combat specialization.
Do you have the location of Lieutenant Tobias also?
This way, brother captain, said Sergeant Lycaeus. They are together and under attack, close to the mission target. The device is within the chapel of the feasting hall.
The enemy despise the notion of the Emperor as God, said Maxim. There is power to be courted by defiling his holy places.
The Emperor is not divine, so says our creed, said Felix,
who had heard the sentiment expressed forcefully from the lips of Gilliman himself.
It does not matter whether he is or not. It is the act that brings the power, not the truth of it. The plague zombies cannot be true. They are an impossibility, yet they exist, said Maxim. That is the power of chaos.
Speaking of which, there are thousands more dead coming behind us, said Felix. We must hurry, identify the target, assess its threat level, and destroy it.
The palace spire was wider than the first. Whereas the sighing spire had been a declaration of art, a rich man's showpiece, the second spire contained the palace proper. Within the walls was a maze of staircases and landings. Elevator shafts plummeted down tens of thousands of stories to the depths of the hive, their cars nowhere to be seen. Within this outer layer of rooms and passageways, the main body of the palace was a series of giant halls, designed expressly with the display of power in mind. The Ultramarines ruled Ardium directly, and so there was no planetary commander, but the office of the governor was sacrosanct, and there were as many depictions of various historic holders of the title and their heraldic badges as there were of the Ultramarines. Statues of Ultramarines native to Ardium lined long hallways. Justinian was of that world, Felix recalled, but the creation of the Primaris Space Marines had been a secret. No monument had been raised to him. Soaring vaulted roofs glittered with mosaics of precious metals, depicting the deeds of ancient heroes. In the silence of the deserted palace, the glittering of the eyes of the figures in the mosaics gave them a sinister, false life. Even so, decay was less prevalent in the palace spire than in the sighing spire, as if the statues and the devotional images in the palace resisted its progress. Only echoes held court there, and the hooting wind. There were bloodstains as well, old and black, and combat damage to the spire itself, but there were no corpses. All the dead walked in the service of Nurgle. The rumble of battle broke through the funereal wind, and Felix's dwindling force picked up its pace. He had lost 7 space marines. 12 more were wounded. His apothecary's grim silence told him that the gene seed of the dead had been too polluted to salvage.
"This way," said Sergeant Lycaeus.
He led the strike force through a series of service corridors, plain and unadorned, ways never seen by the lords who inhabited the palace. Lycaeus led them upwards. The sound of rocket fire rushed down the stair, and they emerged onto a wide mezzanine overlooking the palace's vast feasting hall. A group of Death Guard heavy weapons troopers were firing with impunity down into the combat raging on the main floor. Lycaeus held up a finger to his grinning skull mouth. He and his men stole forwards, attacking the heretic Astartes from behind. 2 died, gutted by power blades before they could react. Felix had his men shoot down the most troublesome, a purple-faced champion with a clubbed claw for a fist. The enemy dealt with, Felix's force took their place. In the audience chamber, battle raged. Felix assessed the situation quickly. Lieutenant Astium's forces were heavily depleted. Tobias's squads looked to have arrived later. The Death Guard fought ferociously, their peculiar specialists choking the air with poison fog and plague spores. Thankfully, the Primaris Space Marine's Mark 10 armor kept this cargo of disease at bay, but the swirling mists made a mockery of their targeting systems.
"A good position," said Felix.
"Purposefully chosen," said Lycaeus. "I will rejoin the others. We are more use down there than we are up here."
Felix nodded and bid him good fortune, then ordered his warriors to creep forwards, ready to fire down at the enemy. At his command, they unleashed a torrent of death upon the foe, slaughtering many where they stood. Several took dozens of hits before they fell, but fall they did. Forced to divide their own fire between the 2 groups in the feasting hall and the newcomers upon the balcony, the Death Guard were hard pressed.
"Brothers, victory is with us," called Felix, amplifying his vox signal to break through the enemy's jamming.
Astium and Tobias hailed him with grim joy. The Death Guard were caught in a crossfire, and the tide began to turn. But the forces of Nurgle were not bested yet. A bell tolled, perturbing the poison gases. Unbelievably, the clanging bell shook the Primaris Space Marines. Bolt rifles wavered and dipped. Warriors looked to their brothers questioningly. Felix recoiled as if struck. The bell's note was a poison all its own. There were promises there among the tolling.
"Embrace my misery," its resonance sang, sinking into the meat of Felix's brain, "and enjoy an end to all future miseries."
Through the melee below, a grossly obese plague lord advanced, a bronze bell hanging from a crook of black horn suspended over his power pack. The bell swung slowly, and its clapper struck the metal. Another doleful peal rolled out over the battle, invigorating the Death Guard. The effect on the Space Marines was debilitating. His shots going wide from a hand suddenly weak, Felix reeled back from the mezzanine's edge. Black thoughts filled his head, taking him away from the battle. He was tormented with visions of his own death, his mighty Primaris body undone by disease and age, reduced to a trembling, ague-smitten shadow. The world fell away, and he found himself racked with sickness in a grey place. His armour was corroded and non-functional, a dead weight on his swiftly weakening frame, and his weapons were breaking in his hands, scorching his nostril with the harsh chemical reactions of oxidizing physoline and failing energy cells. There was a flicker of heat in the reactor upon his back, but it too was fading. He tried to stand, but he could not. He was dying, dying from old age and neglect,
and there would be no heroes to resurrect him as they had Gilliman. The baleful howl of the warp awaited. The bell tolled again.
"There is release from this suffering," the bell sang. "There is joy in pain. Pledge yourself to Father Nurgle and never fear mortality again. Become eternal, become a victor of life. Join the never-ending dance and be merry."
A light penetrated the dismal world that Felix inhabited. He lifted his head from the ground on his age-weakened neck and saw the glowing figure of Codicia Maxim striding through the grey, his blue armour as pure as sapphire, the green shoulder pad of his Aurora chapter insignia as bright as virgin forest leaves.
"Stand firm! Pay no heed! It is but a poison of the warp!" bellowed Maxim.
His voice strained as he spoke. The crystal rods and tracks of his aegishood glowed with fierce counter-witchfire. The bell tolled again. Maxim's image flickered. He approached Felix.
"Captain! You must finish the herald or we shall fail!"
Felix raised a shaking hand, the last fragments of rusty armour falling from his fingers. Maxim grasped his arm, and suddenly he was armoured, young and full of the power of the Emperor. The grey world crumbled as if made of dust. He was in the feasting hall again.
"Go now," said Maxim. "I shall shield you."
The bell rang. Felix took the psychic impact with a grunt. While the Primaris Space Marines were reeling from the bell's dolorous effects, the Death Guard renewed their attack, regrouping while reinforcements made their way in from some of its many entrances. He had to act now. Holding aloft his power sword, he leapt over the edge of the balustrade, landing in the middle of his foes. He recovered well and barged past a traitor space marine, desperate to slay the Beltoler before Maxim's power gave out. Warriors came at him, but he smote them down, crushing the chest of one with a blow from his gauntlet, eviscerating a second with a reverse cut of his power sword. Heart, heart, head, the mantra for combat against other Adeptus Astartes, doubly important when fighting the resilient Death Guard. Despite their toughness, Felix cut them down economically, guarding his movements against excessive flourishes that may expose him. A brief burst from his Boltstorm gauntlet mashed the head of a bloated giant whose armour joints sported fringes of tentacles. The traitor fell to his knees, his additional limbs spasming and falling limp. The bellringer was a metre away. Felix was taller than the traitor, but with far less mass. The bellringer was a swollen horror, bloated with unnatural disease and fell power. His cracked armour strained to contain his bulk. Diseased horns sprouted from his back, the bellhanger but one of them, and they were part of his body. A filthy tabard hung from his armour, yellowed by smoke pouring from a censer at his waist. Felix leapt onto the corpse of the tentacled space marine, using the backpack as a springboard to launch himself at his foe. The bellringer loosed a shot from his plasma pistol, and a globular sun howled past the captain's ear. Felix let fly with his Boltstorm gauntlet, the shots ringing the bell, then brought his power sword up and back for a mighty downwards cut. The blade's powered edge sank deep into the traitor's thick armour, bringing forth a wash of black blood and a ringing grunt, more bell chime than voice. The traitor staggered, his motion setting the great bell on his back into another swing. Sound waves pummeled Felix, piercing the psychic protection of Maxim. His auditory dampers burst. The scent of fried electronics filled his mask, and his ears bled. A second, smaller bell hung from the traitor's hand. He swung it like a weapon at Felix's head. Felix recovered quickly, his Primaris physique aided by the Codicia's psychic might, purging the great bell's effects from his mind, and he swung his power sword, cleaving the bellringer's hand from his body. Blood, thick and slow as tar, congealed at the stump. Felix levelled his sword and rammed it as hard as he could at the traitor's chest. A sparking furrow split the armour as the point scraped across the rounded chestplate, setting the traitor's tabard aflame. It bit near the bellringer's armpit and penetrated the metal to the rotten meat beneath. Felix put all his weight onto the sword and pushed it through his enemy. Metal squealed on metal. The disruption field cracked and banged. Stinking smoke wisped from the wound. The traitor roared and flailed once again with his smaller bell. Felix released his sword and punched hard with his gauntlet, caving in the traitor's helmet. As the bellringer fell, Felix yanked his sword free and swung, cutting through the bell's supporting horn. It fell with a muted clank and was silent. Instantly, the effect of the bell vanished. The Primaris Space Marines recovered their wits and attacked with renewed vigour. Death Guard fell by the dozen, though the cost to the Ultramarines was high.
"Onward!" shouted Felix. "Onward! To the chapel!"
Blade and fist swinging, Felix battled his way toward the chapel's high doors. Seeing their leader so far out ahead of them, the Primaris Space Marines let out a war shout and pressed on, bludgeoning their foes with rifle butt and combat blade when the range became too close to effectively fire. Cutting the head from a power fist-wielding plague champion, Felix made the chapel doors first. He raised his sword and shouted,
"For Gilliman! For Ultramar! For the Emperor!"
The battle was done soon after. Felix set a rearguard before going into the chapel with Maxim and Gerundium. The dead were moving still. Their progress was slow, but they were coming on inexorably. Having positioned his men, Felix returned to the feasting hall and the doorway that led into the chapel. Maxim solemnly pushed open the door, and together they were confronted by the demonic mechanism of Mortarion. All fittings had been stripped from the chapel, leaving it a bare chamber with chipped walls where mosaics had been torn free and murals smashed. Plaster crunched underfoot. Plinths empty of statues held strange alembics. They bubbled furiously, emitting cool smoke that smelled of sickness. They were arrayed at precise intervals, seven in all, surrounding a huge thing made of brass, wickedness, and glass. Its lower part was an immense half-globe full of swirling black particles that, on closer inspection, proved to be evil-tempered flies. The smokes of the alembics were conveyed to this chamber by tubes of moist leather, though whether this was to feed or to kill the flies could not be discerned. Towering proudly from the seething mass of bottled flies rose a complicated mechanism of verdigrised bronze and brass. Seven cracked white dials were mounted on the upper parts, their faces divided into seven portions. As technology, the machine's exterior appeared elegant but primitive, something from a backward world of steam and clockwork. In the centre was a network of fluid circuitry of more sophisticated alien manufacture, though what that held inside was the most esoteric and primitive of all. The Xenos circuitry encased a glowing shard of what looked like stone. It had no deliberate shape, appearing natural, or at least created using poorly refined growing processes. But the curve of it, the bladed end and the knotted part spaced down its length, suggested a monster's finger hacked from a cruel talon. Spiral wires were plugged into crudely drilled holes in several places. Crowning it all was a complicated network of gears that drove three brass orbs around and around, like an orrery depicting a system of a few planets. The combination of sciences was bizarre. Such was the mix of technologies employed in the machine's creation, from the most advanced secrets to the lowest tech base, that were it not for the aching green glow coming from it and the sense of palpable evil that accompanied this fell light, it could have been taken for some dramatist's stage prop. Clockwork tick-tocked with fussy efficiency. The flies buzzing set the Space Marine's teeth on edge, but worse was the hum coming from the rotating spheres.
"It is a clock, a monstrous timepiece," said Maxim, "a warp thing."
"Can you discern how it works?" asked Felix.
In some profane manner, time itself is sickened by this device, said Gerundium.
Can you feel it, my brother? Maxim asked Gerundium. How it reaches out from here, casting a shade over the planet.
I see it as a stain, many-armed and ominous, that embraces all to its darkness, replied Gerundium.
Such evil, said Maxim. And it is not confined only to this room, or even to Ardium alone. Its influence spreads throughout the sector, linking worlds in a dark web of diabolical cause.
Maxim's hand traced through the air, pointing out something invisible to Felix.
It is this that destabilizes the star realm of Ultramar, allowing the leakage of the warp through space and time, returning the dead to unliving life and tempting the faithful from the righteous path.
How can a machine do such things? Asked Felix.
It is not a machine, said Maxim. Not in our sense. It looks like a machine. There is Xenos deviltry here besides the machinations of chaos. Aldari, perhaps. Those parts are tormented.
He paused. Like they are a piece of a device made to function contrary to its intended purpose. But it is mostly warpcraft.
This device was certainly crafted by Mortarion, the fallen Primarch. It has the hallmarks of his work.
Then Lord Gilliman's information was correct, said Felix. Is it safe for my warriors to enter the room?
Safe enough. The device has a perfidious purpose that affects the minds and souls of mortal men. Our warriors should be immune so long as they focus and do not lose themselves, as you almost did, Captain.
Then I will call them in and have this thing demolished, said Felix. We have seen enough. The dead are at the doors of the palace spire. I will call in our transports as soon as this machine is in fragments, and we will leave.